This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We have reached midweek SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, and glad you can be with us. So the New York Yankees have done it again. If you are familiar with the way the Yankees have done business over, 30, 40 years, they did it again. The biggest free agent pitcher on the market, someone they desperately need, and they broke the bank to get him. And it's Gerrit Cole. He will head to New York to become a Yankee in a mind-boggling deal. But here's the thing. Before we get to the numbers, remember, this is something that the Yankees have done for a long time with George Steinbrenner, but over the last couple of years have slowed down a little bit. Remember, Manny Machado didn't go to the Yankees. Bryce Harper didn't go to the Yankees. But they needed pitching, and they needed it badly. They saw the Astros, and they realized we need aces, and they got the ace. And it is a strategic move that now makes them a World Series favorite. 9 years, $324 million. About $36 million a year. I am done trying to figure out the ceiling on this sport. I am so done. I have no idea what it's going to be like in 50 years. A guy's going to be playing for $100 million a season. It's insane. But it is what, you know, look, the Yankees aren't going broke here. The Yankees aren't going bankrupt by giving a guy $36 million a year. Au contraire. By winning a World Series title at any point during these 9 years, one, two, or three, they will be more than recouping the losses of this payroll. But at the end of the day, this is something that Yankee fans have always demanded from their team, right? You have the money, go spend the money. And this goes back to something I've always said in sports. When you talk about teams, you know, sports where they have these salary caps, you become very familiar, if you're a big NFL fan, for example, of understanding the cap. Can my team pay this guy this? Can my team go out and get this running back or whatever it is that your team may need in terms of what the cap availability is? But when you have a sport with no cap, when you have a sport where the spending is whatever it wants to be, pay the luxury tax, pay whatever penalty you have to, if you're a Yankee fan living in New York or anywhere in the country for that matter, you know that they have the bank. And you know when Gerrit Cole becomes available, you better be at the forefront of landing him, and the Yankees did.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, glad you can join us on SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. So, the big story this morning happened late. That Gerrit Cole will become a Yankee. It's not surprising, but you know, it's a big deal because the Yankees made a run last season in the postseason at bats, could hit home runs, but pitching was a problem. And Brian Cashman went to the winter meetings and said, let's go get a pitcher. And not only got the pitcher, he got the best pitcher available in Gerrit Cole, who won his last 16 decisions to close out the regular season, came in second in the Cy Young voting. And I know this goes back to a larger argument with Major League Baseball, because there is a have and have nots in Major League Baseball. That organization, that league, has never been able to come to any sort of competitive balance when it comes to economics. And they don't want it that way. We've had a number of work stoppages based on that reality, that there won't be any sort of salary cap implemented in Major League Baseball. So you get these escalating deals. And for Gerrit Cole, he played it exactly right. He's from Southern California. He did grow up a Yankee fan, but he did not at any point say, look, I'm going to give a hometown discount, or I'm going to go where I want to play. He waited out to get the right deal, the right deal in the right circumstances. You saw Steven Strasburg get a big deal from the Washington Nationals. Boris played it out, got a better deal with the New York Yankees. And again, Yankee fans expect this. Red Sox fans expect this. Dodger fans expect this. You can go down the list of a few of the teams that have the money and the resources to go after a player of this caliber. And this is where the pressure comes in if you're any of the general managers on those teams, especially if you're Brian Cashman. Because nobody cares about how you handle economics as a fan. I've used this analogy many times, but I think it's worth repeating. If you have a business, if you have a local business in your town that you like to frequent, it's your favorite restaurant or it's a store that carries things you like the owner, you like the prices, you like its, you care a little about its economics. Right? Because you want it to last. You don't want it to go out of business. So you may frequent the restaurant, tell your friends about it because you want the owner to do well because he makes a great dish that you like. You're sort of invested in the economics of that business. You want it to succeed. Sports is a completely different thing because we never think that the team is going to go out of business because it ran out of money or it's going to go bankrupt. So as fans, you demand that your team that you root for go out and spend it as much as you can to land a particular player, even if it's a gamble, even if it doesn't work out, even if it doesn't lead to the kind of success you think it's going to lead, you've got to make that move. We've seen for years the Yankees and the Red Sox do this where they'll go after guys just to get the guy so the other guy doesn't get them. But that's what Major League Baseball has become because there is no limit on the amount of money you can spend. So if you have it, go spend it. $324 million for a pitcher is an incredible amount of money, but it's not when you look at the context of what it can mean for the Yankee organization when it's trying to close any of the gaps, the vulnerable gaps that it has in pursuing a championship. They were not Astros good last year. Right? They just didn't have the pitching like Houston did. And the Houston not only had pitching, but it had bats. So you do something strategic here if you're the Yankees by getting Gerrit Cole. You've done a number of things actually strategic by landing Gerrit Cole. One, you weaken the Astros. They're the American League defending champions, and that you've just weakened them by taking away one of their aces. Great. Now the Red Sox are in a position of trying to shred payroll. You've actually upped the ante by increasing yours. So you've put yourself in a competitive situation in your own division where the other big spender didn't land that ace because it's trying to do something different with its payroll than you are. The other thing is that you matched Washington, who landed Steven Strasburg, and now not only do you become a favorite in the American League, you become a favorite for the World Series if you were to play anybody from the National League. So it's not just strategic by landing the best pitcher. It's strategic because you weakened your top competitor. And that was Houston. If Houston had somehow put together a deal to keep Gerrit Cole, no matter who the Yankees were trying to get outside of Strasburg, they were not going to be able to match that. They were not going to be able to be competitive on the mound. So they'd have to figure out how to do it in another way if they were to beat Houston in a 7-game series. Now edge New York. And this is something that as many things get different across the landscape of sports, it's funny how things stay the same. The Yankees have been doing this my entire life, right? My entire life, this is what the Yankees do. They did it especially under George Steinbrenner. And it's kind of ironic because even though you look back and all of the 80s free agent signings that they would have where Steinbrenner would make a big splash, it never led into the kind of success he was looking for. The Yankees made the World Series in 1991. They lost to the Dodgers, and they didn't see the World Series again until 1996. In fact, there were so many dark moments in Yankee baseball during the early 90s that it was amazing. Amazing that they were able to rebound in 1995 to make the playoffs. They should have made the playoffs in 94, but there was a strike, and we'll never know how that year finished out. But, I mean, Andy Hawkins pitched a no-hitter and lost. That's how bad the Yankees were in the early 90s. They were going through managers like Dallas Green and Stump Merrill, right? Yogi Berra had another return in the 80s. I mean, Bucky Dent was a manager for the Yankees for a while, so they were changing managers. The team wasn't all that good. They were trying to get free agents to work, and it didn't happen. Then 96 comes around, and they've got some homegrown talent that comes through the system and bears a lot of fruit. They also pair that up with a couple of good free agent signings. You know, Jimmy Key was one of them. David Cohn ended up being one of them. And then they went on to win 4 World Series titles in 5 years. But the reality was, on the flip side of all of that, was the fact that the Yankees, still at its core base of operation, were a team that was willing to go after the big fish at any time. Roger Clemens, Tino Martinez, whatever it was, they were willing to go after the big fish. Then there was a period of time with Brian Cashman where spending was sort of limited. They weren't making these big splashy contracts. They were kind of burned a little bit by getting Alex Rodriguez and then paying him even more money, and then he missed a whole year. And while the Yankees continued to spend, they weren't blowing anybody out of the water when it came to these kind of mega deals. And now they've got the big mega deal, and they're back doing this. Because where are they? They are in a position to win championships. They've got a lineup that can hit. They've got a lineup that can produce runs. They've got young talent that they look ahead to the future that's not going to, they're not closing out with aging veterans that are going to have knee problems and anything else like that. They've got a young group, a core group that's exciting to watch, but they had to marry that with aces. And they weren't marrying that with aces. And now they are, with Gerrit Cole. And you can watch the development of some of the young other talent that they've got coming through, the, you know, in terms of pitching. And now they're the favorites to win the World Series. Is it a fair system? We've argued this for decades, right? One of the, back in, what, 2002, there was a small work stoppage. There was a work stoppage in 94, obviously, that canceled the World Series. These debates that the Major League Baseball has had about competitive balance. Remember, there was a period of time where Tampa Bay went to the World Series. The Royals had gone to two World Series and won one. There was a feeling like you didn't have to go out and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on players to be competitive. You can grow. The Astros built up draft pick after draft pick after draft pick, but also had the money to go get in a trade or assigning a few pieces that they needed. But the reality was there was always going to be a debate about the competitiveness of baseball and where does it lie. And if you are a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates and you are in a position in 2010, 11, 12, you know, the time when the Pirates were being competitive in their own division and making a run at the playoffs, okay. But how long is the window open? Because eventually the Sharks come. Kansas City, the same thing. Eventually the Sharks come. And you joke. I mean, when I was in Colorado, we used to joke. We didn't want the Rockies to become the farm system for the bigger teams, right? Develop a Troy Tulowitzki only to see him leave, to another place, right? Develop, any of the other young Rockies and just to see them go off and be successful and very rich in the big city. But that's baseball for you. And it's been fought for by the players. It was fought for by the union. They don't want a situation where their money is limited. And look how it's paid off. Go back to the mid-90s. When you would hear a guy like Tom Glavine or anybody else that was sticking up for the players union at the time talking about no salary cap, no need for a salary cap, even in the early 2000s when that debate came rising up again. And you'd hear this national debate about, well, my industry has a salary cap. Whatever field people were in that said, yeah, well, there's a budget for salaries in my company. Why can't there be a budget for salaries in Major League Baseball? But the players knew that down the road, this was the kind of thing that could happen with growth in revenue. Gerrit Cole is going to get $36 million a year. He's going to get $3 million a month over 12 months to pitch baseball games over 6 or 7 months for the Yankees. And that is something that if you went back 20 years, you'd go, what's the ceiling? Well, some would say there would be no ceiling. As long as revenues were increasing, there would be no ceiling. And they're right. Absolutely right. $36 million a year. And it's just going to keep going. You're going to have a $50 million a year player. Whatever position that is, you're going to have a $50 million a year player within the next decade. And it's coming. Because you get competitiveness, and you see revenue growth, and you see the willingness of teams to do this without any real regard to any sort of sanity. That's what you're getting. And Gerrit Cole is worth every nickel of it. Because as long as the revenue is there, as a player, he's entitled to grab it. He's not making anybody broke. The revenue is there for the Yankees to pay this kind of money. And they know that the success of Gerrit Cole, when it equals the success of the Yankees, is going to equal success at the turnstiles and everything else that comes away in terms of media rights and everything else that you can get by playing in New York City. So, but they're back. I mean, they're back doing Yankee things. Just when they kind of disappear to touch, they're back doing Yankee things. All right. That's baseball. Coming up next, NFL. And what was on the videotape? We told you the story yesterday. A story that I believe the Patriots when they say they were just filming a TV show. But there's new information about that that make going to have people going, all right, maybe not. That's next. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, need a last minute gift? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. They have several options for gifts under $20, like a digital tire gauge, a 20-in-1 multi-tool, storage containers, or even a universal backup camera. Or you can get professional quality power torque tool sets starting at just $19.99. And who doesn't love gift cards? You can even buy gifts online, pick them up in the store. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Yeah, my wife reminded me. She says, how you doing on your Christmas shopping? I go, yeah, I'm a last minute guy. She goes, you ordering anything online? I go, yeah, I'll order a couple things. She goes, yeah, you better hustle. She goes, no joke. She goes, some of those you're not going to get in time.
You know what the problem is with guys? We sit there and I know there's stuff that I need to order. And I keep in the back of my mind, like, oh, I got time.
Me too. I do the same exact thing. I used to take the kids to the mall like 2 days before Christmas. I was like, it was just like, whatever we need is going to be in this building right here. Exactly. If it doesn't have it, we're not getting it anywhere, you know.
Now people are giving me a list. I felt proud of myself yesterday.
What'd you do?
I took my middle son. He and I ran to the store real quick. And then I asked him, hey, what do you want to get mom for Christmas? So I actually got the ball rolling.
Good for you.
We didn't buy anything.
Good for you.
But at least I asked him, right?
That's a good point. That is a good point. So yesterday we brought you the story of the year. No, I'm kidding. It's actually kind of a non-story, but nevertheless, it's still a story for you Patriot haters out there that the Patriots were caught filming the sidelines of the Cincinnati Bengals against when they were playing the Browns, claiming it was for a television program called Do Your Job, an in-house media production, where they were doing a little bit of a feature on advanced scouting. What does that take? When you're an advanced scout, what do you do, et cetera, et cetera? It's one of those, you know, in-house media performance. So they were caught by a Bengals representative filming the sidelines. And so Bengals security got involved. They notified the NFL. The NFL confiscated the tape. Now, the production company hired by Robert Kraft or whoever in the Patriots organization that actually finalized the deal for that, independent production crew hired by the Patriots to go film this for this feature, claim they did not, they were looking, just getting B-roll. They were filming the sidelines to get B-roll, and they were unaware of the rule. And so that was put into the report that was given to the NFL, who confiscated their tape to see what was on it. It is being reported that there was 8 minutes of sideline footage on that tape. Now, I don't know if that's confirmed or not. I just hear sources say, so I got to bring it. When I do that, I got to tell you, sources say that 8 minutes were on that tape. Now, this brings up a few problems. I'm with you guys as much. I want to hit the Patriots over the head with this as much as possible, but in realistically, I'm not going to, because this stuff does happen. Sometimes you don't know what's right or what you can and can't do, and sometimes you get caught. I'm sorry. Was I not supposed to go over there? I'm sorry. Was I not supposed to go here? I apologize. Oh, I wasn't supposed to film that. Oh, I'm sorry. Right? It's plausible deniability. If it was 30 seconds, I would say, sure, it's B-roll. If it's 8 minutes, well, now there's an issue, because do you need 8 minutes of B-roll? I mean, I don't know. I don't make documentaries. I don't make video. Do you need 8 minutes of B-roll? Listen, I've been in radio a long time. I know exactly how long 8 minutes is. 8 minutes is a long time. All right?
Yeah, you might.
But do you, you know,
if you didn't get the right shot, I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to, I'm playing devil's advocate right now.
Yeah, I don't blame you because I don't want to, I am not willing to jump up and down screaming at the top of my lungs that the Patriots should be disbanded as an organization for Spygate 2. I don't think this is that big of a deal. The 8 minutes, though, is a little concerning.
No, I mean, that is a long time, but I don't want to, we shouldn't put it in the same realm as the 18 minutes of Watergate tape missing.
Ah, that's right. I would give you that. That's right. I wouldn't do it either.
But, I mean, 8 minutes, yeah. I mean,
it's a lot of time.
If that is B-roll, or I don't know. I mean, are they, were they saying, like, all right, we got to film at least 8 minutes of it. We're going to use maybe a minute and a half, 90 seconds worth of, you know, with a voiceover.
Right. I mean, but here's the other angle to this, that where the detractors of the Patriots story are calling it into question. So the video crew goes to this game. They're in the press box and they're filming the sidelines. A Bengals representative is sitting next to them and realizes that the guy is wearing a credential from the, that is, that says he's with the Patriots, that he's wearing a Boston Bruins hat, and realizes that's funny. You're filming the sideline of the team you're playing against next week wearing Patriots gear. I know you're not supposed to do that, and that's how they got caught. Now, plausible deniability works for the higher-ups, right? Bill Belichick can say, I have no idea about this, and probably is telling the truth, right? But if you're the New England Patriots, and I'm not saying Belichick, and I'm not even saying Robert Kraft because he's just the owner, but if you're in the organization and you're responsible for this aspect of the business, right? I'm responsible for putting together the do your job in-house video every week. I'm producing this. I'm coming up with the idea. I'm hiring the crew, etc. If you're the Patriots, now I have to emphasize this because it's a Patriot problem. Don't you think you absolutely make sure that that video crew knows what the rule is going into that press box and what they can film and what they can't film?
Yes, you would.
Right. You would say, listen, guys, here's the deal. Thanks for this. We're doing this independent crew. Like, hey, we film things, whatever you want us to film, a car race, football thing, what, you know, commercial for the local, you know, restaurant or whatever, we film this stuff. Great. Thank you for your, you know, we're going to get you credentials to the game. These are the things we want you to film while you're there. Fantastic. We'll be a guy there. He'll kind of direct you what to do, what to film. No problem. But by the way, we want to make this clear. You are not allowed to film the sidelines of the game.
All right. But here's my other question. What were they filming on the sidelines?
Well, that's a good question. I'd like to know the content of the tape.
I mean, were they just filming players just sitting on a bench talking? Were they filming coaches coaching?
Now we talked about this yesterday. Now most NFL teams are just going right to the headset. Very, not a lot use hand signals. The Bengals do have a few hand signals that they use. I don't know, to me, and this is my naivete on this. I don't know how quickly you can relay information to a defensive player. When you see the hand signal, how long does it take to go hand signal to my brain to interpret that hand signal to get it down on the field?
Oh, I think you flash like any sort of hand signal, the defensive player will know exactly what play that you're supposed to call.
So
they would know almost
the defensive player is now going to know when he looks to the sideline what the hand signal is, and then he can relay the audible to the player. So that's not going to come from somebody watching the hand signal and then relaying it to the defensive player. There'll be a defensive player being able to look at some minor hand signal and know what that means.
Yeah, I have no doubt. I mean, you got to remember these guys. I mean, this is their livelihood. They breathe football.
Yeah, but I'm talking about timing. I'm talking about timing. Like, I'm the Bengals and I need to make an adjustment, so I do a hand signal. The quarterback knows it immediately. He does it. Now, for the Patriots, that defensive player better know this like the back of his hand if he's going to make an adjustment.
I would say.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's not going to come from the coaches, because you can't, with binoculars, see the play, interpret the play, then come up with a counterplay and relay that down to the field in order to affect that play.
But most defensive coordinators are on the field.
Well, down, I'm talking about the sideline. But I'm talking about somebody able... being able to really see the hand signal.
Well, I'm sure
if you're on the sideline, if you're the defensive coordinator, you don't have time to look at the hand signal across 50-something yards
no,
and interpret that.
No, you have enough time to, you know, throw a hand signal to the middle linebacker who has enough time to call.
No. But how do you get the hand signal? You can't. You have to watch your players. You don't have time to watch the Bengals sideline. You have to watch your players in their formation. You have to have somebody tell you what that hand signal is.
You're talking about from that side. Okay.
Right.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at SB Nation Radio, and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So hit us up. And let us know your thoughts this morning on the big Gerrit Cole signings, or if the NFL is actually going to do anything to the Patriots. I buy their story. I still buy their story. I might be, you might think I'm crazy, or I should be down this conspiracy ladder, but I'm not going down that road. I buy their story. I think this was just shooting some B-roll. I've been around TV where they shoot B-roll. They shoot everything. You never know what you're going to need. You never know what you feel like it's going to make the piece a little bit better. But I will say, if I'm the Patriots, I do a better job of making sure my people know what they can and can't do when they go film any sort of project.
But see, and again, that brings me to the point of what were they filming? Was it, because if it's not one consistent image for 8 minutes, does it really help you if you're just kind of constantly spanning the sideline?
Well, that's exactly, the content of it is really important. You're 100% right. The content is extremely important. What exactly is on the tape? Because it would be really damning to the Patriots story if there was, you seem to have 8 minutes focused on the one guy doing some stuff on the sidelines, relaying right. some plays. Like, oh yeah, we thought he was kind of awesome. I mean, he was just using his hands to, we thought that would be an added feature to the advanced scouting. Isn't that what advanced scouting is? Like interpreting what that means?
But if you're focused on, say, Andy Dalton yelling at his receivers or pumping up his receivers, I mean, how is that going to help you in
right.
your game?
Right.
It's like, oh, look at these tendencies.
Exactly.
He's excited.
And by the way, I shouldn't really sort of excuse the taping. If I mean, teams hate this. I mean, they don't want you to do that no matter what. So, like, I always go, hey, why do you cover your mouth with that with the thing? And they go, oh, there's lip readers. And I'm like, yeah, but really? I mean, really? Lip readers? And I go, they go, yeah, there are. And you're like, oh, all right. Well, maybe that's true. All right. I'll just take your word for it. They're so secretive, but they're very possessive. You know, that's what they are. They're very protective of their content. So they don't want to, you know, give any competitive edge at all to the opponent.
So real quick, is that illegal to hire a lip reader?
See, I don't think there it is. I wouldn't do that. I guess it's kind of like counting cards. It's like the debate with counting cards in casinos.
And
like if you use an electronic device, that would be illegal. But if you use your brain to try to figure out how many low cards and high cards are in the deck, good for you.
Right. I mean, just like in baseball, you can't use videotape or binoculars
yeah.
or something like that, standing in the center field looking at the catcher's hand signals to figure out what pitch is coming.
Yeah.
But if a guy on second is doing it, that's okay.
Yeah, if he figures it out, he figures it out. What are you going to do, right? I mean, I guess that's...
I'm just curious with the lip reading, because everyone does it. Baseball players, you know, you see more and more, you see them now where they cover their mouth when they cover their mouth with a glove. And,
right.
you know, you see football coaches all the time. They have that, you know, laminated sheet of plays.
Yep. They put it right over there.
Now, if you're really smart, you could probably zoom in on that laminated sheet of plays.
Right. Yeah, right.
So, oh, what's this one? What's that
Multiply one? That by 1,000 like a fine microscope.
I think in some way, I think they, you know, coaches are making it a little too complicated.
Yeah, right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, some of them come up with different names. I've heard rumors like that it's a different playbook every single week or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, something stupid. And I'm just, for me, it's like, when was the first time someone got busted for lip reading? Like, yeah, that's exactly right. I don't remember ever hearing that story.
No, I don't either. But I don't think it. I think if you, again, I think if you use your head to figure out your opponent, that's, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, go back to the card counting scenario. You know, when you card count, you in blackjack, although I've been told when I lived in Vegas, you try to count how many low cards come in and how many high cards come in. And then based on some mathematical formula, based on how many cards are left, your estimate of how many cards are left in the deck, you create a number. And that number, if it, whatever parameter that number fits, determines whether or not you should increase your bet or not. That's all you're doing. You're just increasing your odds. You're not trying to win. You're just going, look, mathematically, I have a better chance of landing some high cards. So I'm going to up my bet in, at this point in the shoe, because there's a higher chance of landing the money cards that I want, the kings and the tens and the aces.
Yep.
Right. That's all you're doing. When you're counting cards, that's all you're doing. You're just coming up with a number to say, I've counted this many low cards, I've counted this many high cards, based on how many cards are left in this shoe, whether it's an 8-deck shoe or one deck, you know, single deck, 5-deck shoe, whatever it is, I now have this number, and this number tells me, okay, it's like 8 or whatever it is that they come up with. They go, 8's good for me because it means there's more high cards. I'm going to up my bet. I could still lose. I could still lose the hand, of course, but I have a better chance of winning because the numbers are in my favor. That's all you're doing. But if you're doing that with your brain, how is that illegal? Like, how can a casino arrest you and charge you with that? Right. But now if you bring in a calculator and you've got a device in your shoe and every time you see a high card to low card, you're doing some sort of signal to a box that then, that would be chargeable. The same idea here. If I'm using videotape to get signals or whatever, if I'm using illegal videotape to analyze my opponent's ability to get plays into a game, or, yeah, the NFL should come down hard on you. But if I have a method of using my brain going, I can read their conversation from way over here. Yeah. All right. Maybe you can make the argument is not moral, but even then you would lose me. You're using your brain and the skills that you have to sort of get an advantage. Right. And your example of the stealing signs is even better. The stealing signs one is perfect. The Astros are in trouble not because they stole signs. The Astros are in trouble because they used electronic means of stealing signs. That's the key. So in this Patriots situation, if there was a competitive advantage to doing this, and somehow the Patriots were actually trying to film a 1-12 football team's signals, this is why I don't believe it. For the second time they got caught, I can't believe it. But if there is a competitive edge by doing this, the NFL should come down harshly on him. Do you think the NFL comes down harshly on him just on perception? Meaning, guys, look, we believe your story, but for crying out loud, this was 12 years ago. We hammered you for this. Bill, we tagged you for $500,000 for doing this. I mean, guys, wake up.
I almost feel like this is targeting by the NFL. Right. I mean, targeting I thought was illegal.
Right. Okay.
But
it does.
It does feel like targeting. It's always, well, it's the Patriots again. And I'm certain there's another. I'm certain the Buccaneers are doing something similar to this, or the Panthers, or the Broncos. I mean, just pick any team. I'm certain everyone's trying to get an edge, but for some reason, all eyes always seem to be on the Patriots. Everyone's looking out for the Patriots to be cheating.
Exactly, and that's the point, right? If this was a story, if the Athletic did an investigative report on the details of the Carolina Panthers going into being at some game, filming the sidelines, and some writer took all the time in the world to be like, then they left the hotel. They went up to the press box. Little did the Green Bay Packers know that they were setting up in the press box not to be filming this, but you would go, I don't care. I don't have time to read that. I'm sure it's a good write, but it's Carolina Panthers that stink. I don't care. You throw the Patriots in this story, even if you're like me and you believe the excuse, even if it's plausible, it's just too good to pass up. It's too good of a story to just go, nah, who cares? It's the Patriots doing this again when it was the biggest story of 2007. And now what was great about that season was the Patriots went, you know what? Screw you. we're going to win every game on the calendar now. You're going to hit us for this? Fine. We'll Almost. Win every game in the regular season. Almost.
Almost.
We're going to win every game in the regular season. And it's very much like, can you imagine if they had won that Super Bowl against the Giants, and then a few years later they get in this Deflategate controversy?
Yep.
They would have won Super Bowls the year when everybody was like, punish them, kill them, bah! They're cheaters. And they went, all right, fine. Like, the Patriots accepting the trophy from Roger Goodell the year of Brady's suspension, I thought was so sweet for them, for that organization. Like, thanks for this.
One of the few times outside Boston people rooted for the Patriots to win.
Exactly. You know,
just to make that happen.
As much as I like to see the demise of the Patriots for my own benefit as a Steeler fan, I thought that Deflategate was nonsense. I thought that was absolute nonsense. And just to see them win the Super Bowl at the end, it was like, of course they did. So maybe they'll get more motivation now to try to win the Super Bowl now that everybody thinks they're cheaters a third time. But I think this is a non-story. I think this goes away. But I want to know what's on the tape, Ron. You're 100% right. If it's solely focused on the one guy sending in a few signals, this is going to be such a terrible look.
And that very well could be. Or it could just be a kicker practicing kicks in the nets. We don't know.
What if the answer is, we think Zach Taylor is just so fun to film on the sidelines. He's so animated and young, and he's running around. He's trying to spark up a team. We thought it'd be good video.
Yeah. Because, I mean, let's also look at the larger issue. I don't think the Patriots need a competitive edge against the Bengals.
No, that's the other factor.
That's the
in
funny
all of
thing about this. You're talking about a team that is 1-12.
You're gonna risk that kind of scrutiny? Risk that kind of scrutiny on the Bengals? It's funny because I was reading an article about this. The guy from Cincinnati, who covers the Bengals for The Athletic, wrote an article about it. And he goes, while the Bengals are mad, they are trying to move past it because they've got 100 other problems to deal with.
Right.
And I thought, that's perfect. Yeah. That's a perfect way to put this. Sure, they're upset that this happened, but at the same time, they're like, that's one of about 75 things I'm trying to fix on this stupid football team. Because we're going to have 1-12. It can't beat anybody. Oh, God, except the Jets. That could do. Apparently, that's a doable thing.
Well, the Jets didn't get caught videotaping, yeah,
that's
obviously.
Right. Obviously, the Jets needed all the help they could get. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Roll along. It is Wednesday, SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM here on a Wednesday. Looking forward to the weekend that is. So we got Army-Navy coming up this weekend. If you've never been to an Army-Navy game, try to go see it. It's in Philadelphia. It's very, very patriotic and it's one of those key football games that there's just something added to it. There's just a really different feel.
Get to see a lot of push-ups, hopefully.
Yeah, you get to see a lot of push-ups.
Most years.
Yeah, I spent some time at the Air Force Academy working with their athletic program on a variety of different sports. So I got to see how cool it is with military academies when they play each other.
All right, quick question for you since you used to hang out there a lot. Does the Air Force, do they get jealous?
Yeah, they do. It is. Actually, they do. Some people do because it's the biggest hype football game amongst the service academies. It doesn't include them, right?
And yeah. I know Army plays Air Force, Navy plays Air Force.
They all play for the President's Cup, the President's Trophy, the Commander-in-Chief Trophy is what it's called. And so the team with the best record among the service academies gets the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. If they all tie, finish 1-1 against each other, then the team that won it last year gets to keep the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. So it's a big deal. But yeah, Army-Navy for decades was, you know, one of the key football games in this country. And Air Force just, they're not involved in it. You know, it's John Feinstein had a really
good
line.
West Coast bias.
That is, I know, right? John Feinstein wrote a book called A Civil War, and it was about Army-Navy. And one of the lines that he has in it that used to get repeated a lot when I was around the Air Force Academy was, Army hates Navy, Navy hates Army, but they both hate Air Force. So that's basically, you know, Air Force is kind of on the outside, but they hate both of those two. It's a weird hatred though. When I use that term, they're brothers, but in the military, they're all united, but there is such a deep rivalry for one another. It's pretty wild.
It's that fun hate.
Yeah. Exactly.
But, I mean, there's gotta be, the only reason why I say there's gotta be jealousy because Army Navy forever, as long as I can remember, has its own weekend. Has its own Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. There's its own Saturday. That's exactly right. You get the Heisman Trophy and Army Navy. That's what you get. Like that's what you get at the end of the season. But I remember years for there was about a 3-year period of my time in Colorado Springs where I did pregame and postgame show for the Air Force football team. And one of the cool things of doing the pregame show was I had this like remote unit that I got that was like this wireless communication that went to the press box and was sent. So I was in the parking lot and I would do interviews with various people who were, you know, hey, come to the game and they've got this and this and this. It was mostly promotional stuff, but I would talk about the game and I would do some other things. And I can remember every time they had a home game against Army or a home game against Navy, and I did that. I'm not kidding. The generals that would show up with their AK-47s and the dogs and the bomb sniffing dog. It was surreal. And I've been to college football games all over the place, but I never felt like a level of, oh my God, who's that guy? Are you talking about soldiers with guns and bomb sniffing dogs and they're making a way for this general? It's a really cool experience. And then just to watch, you know, like watch the cadets march out in perfect unison and just it's a sight to behold. That when you get Army Navy, when you watch Army Navy, if you've never watched it or you've watched it for the 20th time, I think there's still an emotion when you see the cadets or both marching perfect in unison onto the field in the pregame ceremonies. It is a wild scene. You should catch it out Saturday.